KALW.
From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents. Context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
I live in Sunnyvale, South Bay.
I live in Oakland, California.
Concord.
Parkside.
I live in Alameda.
Marina.
Currently living in the Mission District.
Coming up, the story of how a defiant radio station is operating in a repressive country.
My son said, "Hey, Dad, why don't we found our own radio station?" And being even crazier than he is, I said, "Okay, why not?"
A look inside Turkey's first and only listener-supported station. Then we'll talk to an Oakland cartoonist who's telling stories from her daily life through comics.
The only way I was able to, like, learn about just, like, the world around me was through, like, these pictures.
Keeping it real on the airwaves for World Radio Day. Stick around. Today is World Radio Day. It's an annual celebration organized by UNESCO, the UN's educational, scientific, and cultural organization. And although President Trump officially pulled the U.S. from UNESCO in 2017, we here at KALW are still celebrating. And it's fitting because there's a real camaraderie that exists between radio stations. There's this special relationship. And when we travel, we often like to check out the local radio scene. Reporter Jeremy Dalma spent some time in Istanbul, where he was able to visit Turkey's first and only listener-supported station. It's called Açık Radyo. In English, that means open radio.
Açık Radyo.
The station remains a beacon of free speech in a country with a government that regularly cracks down on reporters. Reporters Without Borders consistently ranks Turkey low for press freedoms, so it can be downright dangerous for journalists there. Jeremy wanted to see what made them so unique and what's kept them going.
Over the past decade, Turkey has been losing many of its press freedoms. And in recent years, there's been terrorist attacks, millions of refugees entering the country, and a president who's been consolidating more and more power. After a failed coup in 2016, the government closed 169 newspapers, publishers, TV, and radio stations. Thousands of reporters lost their jobs, or worse. Turkey currently has more journalists in jail than any other country in the world. So I wanted to visit Açık Radyo to see what it was like to make radio in a country that shuts down media outlets. To get there, I have to take a ferry across the Bosphorus. That's the waterway that divides Istanbul. After I get off the ferry, I walk up the hill to the station. It's noon, and a music program called Rambo Mozart is playing from one of the two small recording studios. There are years of old frame station schedules and posters all over the building, featuring the station's frequency, 94.9. As I walk into the kitchen, I find Utku Zuru relaxing with a coffee.
Hello. So you are on the air this morning?
Yeah, I was.
His show is called Yeşil Bulten, or Green Bulletin.
Yeşil Bulten.
Today, they were talking about the effect of a new coal power plant in northeastern Turkey. He says most locals are opposed to the government project because of its environmental impact.
Are other places talking about that issue, or is it mostly just here at Açık?
Not in TV. No TV, no radio, but three newspapers, three opposite newspapers in Turkey, Cumhuriyet, Bir Gün Evrensel. That's all, actually.
Meaning those three papers are some of the few remaining independent news sources that are fighting for survival in the country. The rest are one-sided, in favor of the government led by President Recep Erdogan.
The government says, if you against a power plant projects or the mine projects, you are terrorist. Oh, they always say this about every issue, about every project.
Media restrictions aren't new in Turkey. For example, it's been illegal since 2005 to, quote, insult Turkishness. that's been used to silence people from talking about things like the Armenian Genocide. But in recent years, the restrictions have gotten much, much worse. Tens of thousands of demonstrators pushed back during the Gezi Park protests in Istanbul's Taksim Square in 2013. During that spring of demonstrations, Açık Radyo was one of the main sources of information. When other reporters were restricted at their home outlets, they could come and talk freely on the station. Once the protests ended, the government continued to tighten restrictions. And after the failed coup in 2016, they silenced all but a few independent media sources. Zeru hosts his show here for an hour every Thursday as a volunteer, but he used to be a full-time journalist.
In TV, I was doing 4 hours live show daily.
4 hours of live
four
show
Four hours,
a day?
Yes.
5 days a week?
Yes, every day, every weekday. So
that's a lot.
It is. But I liked it.
Yeah. What was the station?
IMC TV.
And it's gone now.
It is shut down by government.
Since that station closed in October 2016, he's been writing corporate PR. And that's what he says many journalists have had to do to make money. But Açık Radyo gives him a place to stay on top of the issues, hoping that he'll eventually be able to get back to work.
In these days, in Turkey, Açık Radyo is like an island, you know. Staying together makes us a bit more strong, maybe. That's why it's important.
Upstairs is General Manager Ömer Madra. His desk is filled with Turkish periodicals and pamphlets from the station. Madra hosts their flagship current affairs show, Açık Gazete, which translates as open newspaper.
Açık Gazete. We describe this program as a something intergenerational, in between the lines, and intercontinental, you know, always in between.
For the last 20 years, he's spent 2 hours every weekday morning interviewing people about what's going on politically in Turkey and internationally. This morning, they talked about how the Turkish courts aren't independent from the authoritarian government.
Merhaba herkes. Açık Radyo burası 94.9 açıkradyo.com.tr ve açık.
And I talk about wars, you know, genocides and whatever, and I throw all these things upon the listeners, and there you are. Let them solve it, you know, global warming.
Madra's always smiling, always telling stories, and if you stick around long enough, he'll likely end up roping you into hosting your own show on air. He started the station back in 1995.
It was a totally accidental, as very many things in life are.
This is his second career. Before running a radio station, he had spent years as a professor, researching international law and human rights. But he had grown disillusioned with restrictions around academic freedoms in the country. The airwaves were opening up, though. Before 1993, the government had a monopoly on all radio and TV. But then they let private groups start their own stations.
My son said, "Hey, Dad, why don't we found our own radio station?" And being even crazier than he is, I said, "Okay, why not? But it will be a free, independent radio station. It will be progressive and so on." This is crazy, I mean.
There had never been anything like this in the country. They took the model of being listener-supported, meaning they have regular fundraising drives, just like public radio stations in the United States. They're still the only one in Turkey that does this. And Madra says that's important. Without financial independence, they wouldn't have control over what went out on air.
Probably the highest priority goes to being independent.
One of the ways the government has controlled or shut down other media outlets is by finding ways to limit their funding.
Alo, alo. Muhterem Sami'in, burası İstanbul Telsiz Telefonu.
According to everyone I spoke with, there aren't any other independent talk radio stations in Turkey. In the U.S., NPR stations have each other to get content and support from. They're part of a network. For Açık Radio, it's just them. There is a government-run national radio and TV network, similar to the BBC, but editor Ilksin Mavituna says they only support President Erdogan's government.
This is only the propaganda.
Mavituna has been at the station since 2005 and hosts their other main daily program, Açık Dergi, or Open Magazine. It's 2 hours of arts and culture every weekday afternoon. Yesterday's show featured a pair of musicians from Greece in the studio. I wanted to know if things had changed for the station over the past 5 years.
Looks like the same for me. To me. But many radios are closed now. So many things change for them. I know that. But not big things has changed for us in Açık Radio. It was always hard to do that, to do the radio.
The station was actually already closed down by the government for 15 days a decade ago because they read a Charles Bukowski poem on air. When I mention Açık Radio to people around town, everyone first says that they love the station. And then they say they're surprised it hasn't been shut down yet. Mavituna tries to brush off those fears.
We hear that very, very often. I don't get it, why people are just that pessimistic. But they're right as well.
I mean, there's 160, I read, media outlets that have been closed around the country.
It's true. It is true. I don't know, maybe we're waiting our turn. We'll see. I mean, nothing to do.
Are you scared that might happen?
Of course, yeah. As a person, yes. But as a part of the Açık Radio, no. I'm not afraid. Why should I be afraid? They can stop the broadcast, but that doesn't mean the end of Açık Radio. We had books, we had big electronic archives, and also we have a memory shared with the listeners. I mean, every month or every 2 months, every one of us just, you know, got into a depression. Just, you know, not having nightmares. But yeah, this is normal in these times. What should I say?
Some people I spoke with said that Açık Radio might still be open because closing them would be more trouble than it's worth. That there might be a lot of international pressure if anything happened to them. But their listenership is actually on the smaller side, only 40,000 people a day in a city of 15 million. When I ask Amer Madra about the station getting shut down or the possibility of getting arrested, he mentions a Turkish folk saying.
Fear won't help you with the Grim Reaper.
Yeah.
Let's not talk. Let's forget about this.
You don't forget about it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, we will do our best. 22 years has passed. We have made our mistakes, but we never change our ways, and we never will.
He changes topic and opens up a book written by a 9-year-old fan.
So the main hero of the story is a radio station, and they're struggling against a corrupt king, you know, together with a sorcerer, and they win. This is fantastic. I mean,
Açık Radio. And then he goes back to telling story after story, talking about the community of thousands of guests, programmers, and friends who have come through the station since 1995, staying enthusiastic and staying defiant. In Istanbul, I'm Jeremy Dalmas for Cross Currents.
You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Hannah Baba. Now let's turn to the world of comics. The success of the movies Black Panther and Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse has a lot of people talking about diversity in the comics industry. And here in the Bay Area, we've got Oakland cartoonist and educator Brina Nunez Peralta. She draws about the Afro-Latinx diaspora and queer people of color, and her art is inspired by her own experiences of not fitting in. She sketches it all out with KALW's Janae Darden.
You tackle a lot of areas in your cartoons, again, about queer people of color, self-love, and just that social awkwardness of fitting in, being Afro-Latinx. Why were comics such a powerful art form when it comes to addressing these things?
Let's see. I think for me, like looking back at my youth too, I wasn't very communicative. So the only way I was able to like learn about, I want to say, just like the world around me was through like these pictures. And for me, like the significance of addressing like the intersectionalities of like identity, especially as like a person of color who comes from a migrant family and being from the Bay Area too, I always feel like this is like what the U.S. looks like to me. And unfortunately, everybody outside of the country has like a different perspective on what it is to be like of like this nation. And we don't really get to, again, see that we are like a people of like various like histories, and what do we do to also survive? And for me to survive is to like write positive affirmations about Afro-Latinx beauty and being gentle with yourself, especially if you do identify as a queer person of color.
What were the comics that influenced you early on? I read that your mom, she really liked comics.
Yeah. She migrated here from Guatemala to the Mission District with my family. And she told me that some of the comics that helped her with her English were Archie comics. And for me, I was always like gravitated towards Garfield the Cat comic strips.
Oh, yeah. I like Garfield and I like Archie. So, but,
yeah.
But Garfield's, yeah, funny.
Yeah. Yeah. I just always liked talking animal comic books. I also read some of like Charles Schulz's Peanuts and I want to say Sonic the Hedgehog too. I was really influenced by my brother's taste.
Okay.
Yeah. And yeah, I just always had like an affinity with talking animal people comics.
We know there's not a lot of diversity in the comic industry. Mm-hmm. Did you ever find comics that represented you growing up?
Not for a really long time, not in my youth. For a long time, I've mostly collected comic books by like white male creators. Those were like the most accessible like authors at the time. But in college, I went to SF State and I first learned about Love and Rockets by Jaime Hernandez and his brother Gilbert Hernandez. They're like brothers from Southern California. And it was like the very first time I felt very seen in a comic book. A lot of brown characters, different characters that also like were of very like various ethnicities, and queerness was also like a part of their journey too. So that was like the one title that really influenced like my life goal in the comics world.
You know, it's interesting because I have a cousin and he's 11, and he's a black boy, and I was looking for Christmas for books for him to buy, and I noticed the books his age, they were all like Ray Ray got shot, and you know, it was all, and it was like, you know, Tyrone's mama died, and I was just like, okay, like where's the black boy joy, you know, books,
exactly.
You know, like, you know, our lives are not all trauma, and I've even heard authors say that sometimes they've had a hard time getting published when they pitch books that aren't necessarily, these authors of color, when they pitch books that aren't about trauma.
Yeah, I believe that. It's like this weird, like voyeuristic need to see what it feels like to be a person of color, like struggling in the U.S.
We've talked about what you know, what your comics are about, which is interesting is that you're in your comics. Like, you are like, you draw yourself. And like
I've always been kind of comfortable drawing myself, and I use myself as like a model, if anything. It's just fun. I like to use myself and experiment, like, in using myself as as a tool to experiment with like other drawing styles.
Because you share so much personal stories in your work. So when you tell kids personal stories of your work and your passion for cartoons, mm-hmm. so they may not be open to going to the bookstores, the comic book stores, but how are they receptive of you when you share your personal story?
They're really impressed by like the work itself, and they'll always ask me like, how did you do that? Like, what are these blue lines? Like, what is that for, Ms. Brina? And it's definitely a huge ego boost when you're a cartoonist and you're teaching comics to youth, since I think a lot of us happen to be very insecure, like self-critical.
What kind of comfort and connection do you hope others in the same boat as you, your readers, your followers, can get from your comics?
I hope that readers feel comfortable with the discomfort of not fitting in into whatever it looks like to be Salvadoran or whatever it looks like to be like Guatemalan, etc. Because I belong to two different cultures, I sometimes always don't always feel like I am more so this and more mm-hmm. so that. So I hope people feel like they feel less alone in those types of like scenarios, those like moments of insecurity, but to also like relish in the joy of like being an outlier too, because that just makes you even more special as a person. I feel like there's been a really beautiful movement that's been happening here in the Bay Area, mostly with folks of color. It's like the very first time I feel like I'm with a chosen family that's unconditionally supporting each other.
So do you have any future dreams for your art, or do you feel like you're living your dream?
I feel like it's happening. I just want to keep creating more comics.
That was Oakland cartoonist Brina Nunez-Peralta speaking with KALW's Janae Darden. And you can keep up with more events like that from around the Bay Area. Just subscribe to our weekly newsletter. Go do it at KALW.org and click Cross Currents. This music is by La Misa Negra from Oakland. They're performing tomorrow night at Freight and Salvage in Berkeley. Are the people that worked on today's show. Sarah Nora Coast, Maggie McKay, Kevin McLean, Lisa Morehouse, Marissa Ortega-Welch, True Quinn, and Eli Wertschafter. Our engineers are James Rollins, Tarek Foda, and Gabe Graben. Content manager is Shirin Adil. Our managing editor is David Boyer. Deputy news director is Angela Johnston. News director is Ben Trefney. Our opening theme music is by the John Santos Quintet. For Cross Currents, I'm Hannah Baba.